I'm Dave Wiesdock, Sage of Creative Scaffolding.
And I'm Jen West, Professional Rebel of Delight.
And this is Shadow Casting. Hey, Jen, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, Dave. How are you doing this fine day?
Oh, man, I am just loving the weather outside. And I was taking a walk this morning before we recorded this podcast. And I was thinking about, you know, spring and how it's this symbolic time of renewal and rebirth and change and new beginnings. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of the quote we were talking about last week, which is that Carl Jung quote about the unconscious and the conscious, and how if you don't make those things conscious, it directs your life, and we'll mistakenly call that fate. And I realized that when we especially start the new year, when we have all these changes that are happening, or we set these goals of things we want to accomplish, if we're not conscious of why we can't make the change, then the change doesn't stick, and we call that fate. But there's another part to this that I want to maybe dive into today. We have a shared or a collective unconscious that Jung kind of hinted at, and that was archetypes.
Oh, Dave, you are going right into something we play with constantly. And it's really funny, too, because we don't even realize how often we are playing with archetypes, right?
Absolutely. And it makes me wonder if our audience has really given thought to archetypes and how they can be such a powerful tool in our lives if we let them. I think often we're introduced to archetypes from their shadow aspect or that underlying maybe sabotage or not so great character trait that we're not a fan of within ourselves. And the real kind of work here with archetypes is learning how they show up in our lives and what message they're trying to give us.
It's a brilliant tool for personal growth. But if we're diving into archetypes, Dave, we're going to have to break this thing up into several episodes.
I think so. There's just so much here. And I would love to take our audience on that journey, because to me, true shadow casting is looking at these archetypes and learning how they show up in our lives. When we cast that long shadow, oftentimes when we're unaware of how we're casting that shadow, when we're unaware of how the archetypes show up in our lives, that's what we call fate, just tying it back to that quote. And so for me, I think that this is definitely going to be more than one podcast. And I'm just really excited to discuss this topic today. To start, I thought I would talk about how I found archetypes. And truly, I was introduced to it back in probably my late teens, early 20s. And it was something that was introduced as more of the shadow side of it, something that needed to not necessarily be feared, but something that needed to be worked on or worked through. And there is a component of that. But I think it wasn't until you really introduced me to the broader applications and aspects of archetypes that I really learned where the gifts come from working with these. And for everyone listening, archetypes show up in a lot of different ways. And sometimes we compartmentalize them, but really our real, true, deep archetypes, in my opinion, infiltrate in all aspects of our lives, whether it's at home, work, how we talk to ourselves even. And so when you reintroduced me to archetypes, I think that really opened up my world to giving me some play with finding things that I didn't necessarily like about myself or things that I kind of kept in the unconscious and made them conscious, but in a way that was approachable because it was this collective symbol, so to speak, this archetype. So I would really like to hear from you, Jen. How did you find archetypes and what was kind of your journey to discovering those? Like what pulled you into that?
I think I played with archetypes, not realizing they were archetypes for a long time. One of them that I started to play with was when I started learning about the personality type, like INTP or those different things. It was put in a different format. It was called Kiersey Bates. And so they'd take just pieces of those and put them in an archetype. So all SPs were artists. And I don't remember the other. There are four of them. And so SPs and then SJs and NTs and NPs. And we'll talk about those another time. But they all had their archetype that they were attached to. And the SP was an artist. And I really liked that. When I started looking at archetypes as archetypes, it was the same avenue that I sent you into them, which was Carolyn Miss's work and her archetypes and finding 12 that are inside of you. And you go into her information and you read through archetypes and find out which ones are you, and just this huge journey. And that's when I started to get archetypes. And then kind of like shadows, once you start looking for shadows, like physical shadows on trees or shadows in yourself, once you start looking for them, archetypes are everywhere. I mean, Facebook uses them constantly. Like, which character are you from this television show? You know, and you're like, which one am I? You know, it's all archetypes, or which superhero you like, or all of that kind of stuff. And I'm a big fan of Carl Jung as well. And he's the father of archetypes. Archetypes came around earlier than that. Plato spoke about archetypes, but it was more ideals and forms, and then we get a representation of it. So it wasn't quite what Jung did, but along the same lines. So Plato would say, something is beautiful precisely because of the extent of the archetype of beauty it presents in. So there's this archetype of beauty, and then we see a physical thing as beautiful because of that archetype. And then Jung, he's the father of it. And he got into these archetypes because after working with Freud, he decided that the psyche was split into three parts. And the first part of us, the first part of our psyche is our conscious psyche. And it's everything that we know through our senses that are actively in our thoughts at this moment, stuff that's present to us right now that we are conscious of. Fairly straightforward. Then we have a personal unconscious, and that's all of our memories, traumas that happened in this life that we're working with, and things that are outside of our awareness right now. So it's everything from stuff that we think about that we're not thinking about right now, or stuff that we've forgotten, or past things that our senses take in, but we didn't register. They didn't consciously register for us, but they are in our personal unconscious. And then he came about with this thing based on myths and working with schizophrenics, which I thought was fascinating. He started noticing that schizophrenics had these same themes or dreams or stories that were very deep and seemed universal. And over his course, after he started researching all of this, he realized there was a collective unconscious. And it's all the shared themes of humanity. It's what makes us human, like our human instincts and that kind of stuff. So it's this shared energy that we all vibe with. And that's where archetypes live. So myths and superheroes and religious figures, they're all part of the archetypal structure. Still diving in, but just another second, then we can get on to playing. So Jung had four major archetypes. One is the persona, like the mask we wear. Then there's the shadow, which is our favorite thing. And that's the part that we reject, whether it be talents that we have or parts of ourselves that we don't want to have, that we were told by society we shouldn't have, that we've just shoved away and forgotten about. Then we have the anima and animus archetype, which is, generally speaking, if you're a woman, it's the masculine energy in you. And if you're a man, it's the feminine energy in you. But that's a whole can of worms that we could dive into later. And then lastly is the self. And that's like all of those pieces of our persona, shadow, anima, animus coming together and us becoming whole. And it's the unification of that conscious and unconscious. So it's our integrated self. And then past that, which I think is what we're going to talk about today, Dave, are the character archetypes, which are so fun. And they have so much that we can learn and grow out of. And Jung had 12, but he said there was a limitless number of archetypes. And Carolyn Miss went with this, and I've seen other places that really explore these. And it's like the ruler or the king or the sage or the innocent. He has a lot. The hero, the warrior, you know. So anyway, I've rambled on.
A lot of things came to mind as you were sharing this. And so I'd like to circle back to a couple things if you're game. So as you were sharing, I had this quote come to mind from, of all people, William Shakespeare. And I don't know if you know the quote I'm going to share, but it's, "What is a name, or what's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other word would smell as sweet." And I was thinking about the archetypes. It's that collective unconsciousness that you were talking about. Even if we give it another word, there's an energy. When you think of the word hero, most people have something in their mind that resembles a hero. And if I were to say, "Jen, give me an example of what you think of a hero is," and I were to give you an example, we might come up with two different hero names. Maybe I say a superhero like Spider-Man.
Right. And I say Marcus Aurelius or something like that.
Exactly. Or I'm sure there's hundreds or thousands of heroes, right? We could get into Joseph Campbell's work, even if we wanted to go that route with the hero of a thousand faces. And the idea is the hero is a symbol. It represents the collective understanding of what that archetype means to humanity. And part of our podcast is about celebrating our humanity. And so learning our archetypes is a way for us to celebrate our humanity, to celebrate what's inside of us.
Right. It really helps us connect with the people around us. These are the ways that we communicate. And yeah, it is. It's all about the humanity. One of the really great things about working with archetypes is we feel more connected. Oh, I'm not alone. That's in this movie. I feel seen.
And to add to that point, I wanted to break apart that personal unconsciousness versus collective unconsciousness, because I feel that that's important to this conversation. And the reason for that is there are a collective understanding of heroes, staying on that example. And that doesn't mean that every single person has the hero front facing for them. It doesn't mean that the hero archetype doesn't resonate to them. But maybe that's not in their kind of main grouping of archetypes with what makes up how they present and interact within the world. And so you have this collective unconsciousness, which is all the archetypes, and then you have this personal unconsciousness. And for our listeners that have been following along in our podcast, I wanted to take a step back or a journey back to a few of our past podcasts where we talk about our personal unconsciousness with the shadow casting. And the first is the quote I had shared. I think it was one of our first quotes about how thoughts become words, words become actions, actions become habits. To me, that resonates as the personal unconsciousness. It's these little moments over time that build up and create an unconscious pattern of behavior that, again, as Jung said, we call fate. And so the other aspect of that is that, to me, the personal unconsciousness is the individual way that we resonate with those archetypes. Case in point, if both Jen and I have the hero archetype in our sort of wheelhouse, so to speak, Jen referenced Marcus Aurelius, I referenced Spider-Man. Both of those are heroes by their own right, but it's the energy of how it shows up in our personal unconsciousness that makes us resonate with a different hero, one over the other. And so to me, that's really where the play comes with these archetypes. It's not, I mean, there is the feat, so to speak, of identifying the archetypes that show up within your own life. But then there's that next layer of really identifying why it shows up in your life, or in what way it's unique to showing up in your own life. Because going back to our whole entire podcast of shadow casting, the way that we interact with our archetypes and the more conscious we are of our archetypes, that's how we cast our shadow in the world.
And that brings up another piece we want to keep in mind here for all of our listener audience. Just because you have a role in the world doesn't mean that that's one of your archetypes. As an example for me, I am a mom. I have a 13-year-old boy. And I love him and I nurture him, but I don't have to really resonate with the archetype of the mother. It's just not an energy that I put into my relationship with my son. The relationship I have is more adventurer and guide, and those archetypes are the ones that are playing into the role of me being a mom. And so we want to keep that in mind when we think about this. Just because you have a role, like maybe you're a manager or something, does not mean that that translates into the leader archetype.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. So two things on that. One, I agree with the mother archetype, because when I reached a certain age, my mom even said, okay, at this point, I'm here to be your mentor, your guide, to help you walk through how you want to live the next part of your life. It was at high school time when I had a little bit more maturity and understanding of myself. And I think she kind of did the same thing. She chose a different way or a different archetype to present as that role of the mother. And going to the second point, this was huge. This was a huge realization that I just came to with you over the past month, I think. I had this belief, going back to our original podcast about the senator and how that casted a long shadow for me, that I had to be the leader archetype in everything I did. And the crazy thing is, the more I chased it, the harder it seemed to become that. And the truth is that the leader archetype might be in me, or the energy of it. And it was in letting go of that archetype that I was able to actually step in as a leader. And this is some really like deep level analysis of archetypes. And I wanted to get to the idea of why, for example, I picked the sage of creative scaffolding instead of the leader of creative scaffolding. I feel that I can resonate with the role of leadership more as the sage than I can as just taking that archetype of the leader. Again, this goes to that collective unconsciousness versus personal unconsciousness, I believe. That collective unconsciousness of everyone kind of has an idea of what it means to be a leader, although maybe that is a little bit more subjective than one podcast, but there's a general sense of what everyone can agree on means to be a leader. You know, it's someone that takes a charge or the main role. They're the person that everyone goes to, and they make these tough decisions, especially in the business setting. You think of the leaders as the managers typically, or the high-level execs. But there's always that prevailing philosophy, especially in business, that not all the leaders have a role or a title with that. Many leaders are the people without the roles because they're able to create influence without the need of a title or fear tactics or control. They create influence because they're willing to empathize with the people they're working with and create a level of trust and a foundation. And that's true leadership. And for me, I do that, I feel, more as the sage and becoming that sage archetype than I ever did as trying to be this leadership archetype.
Right. It's the difference between being the king and sending down all of the notes onto the subjects versus being somebody in the midst of it who has curiosity and ideas to share that could grow a person.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really important as you start to go through these ideas, is this just a role I have, or is there this energy inside of me that really matches the symbol of this archetype? Another one for me, like I said, I didn't resonate with the mother. Even when I decided I wanted to have a kid, it was more curiosity. It was almost like an explorer going out and saying, what would it be like if I guided somebody? Who would they become if I left it more open? What's it like just to have a human being and let them blossom? There wasn't this, I want a baby and I want to hold it. No, when he went to kindergarten, I was like, yay, go. Thank you. And some moms were crying and they missed their baby and, you know, their kid's growing up. And I'm like, my kid's growing up. He's becoming more fun. Even with puppies and kittens, when they were useless, I didn't really like them very much. You know, whatever, pet them, they're cute. But until they could actually engage and play, I just wasn't into it. So that mother archetype is not one of my archetypes. Same thing. I love martial arts. I love the movement of it, the physicality, but I don't have the warrior archetype. I'm not out there defending and creating change and serving. It's just not my archetype, but I still do martial arts. So it's the role versus the archetype.
And I mean, just for the audience listening, I believe that's because you have the athlete archetype, correct?
Yeah, I did have the athlete for quite a while. Yeah. Oh. So we're talking about Carolyn Miss's work again, and she has a brilliant website. And if people are into archetypes, highly recommend going there. She's got free content and she has what, like 80 archetypes or something?
Oh yeah, they're over 70.
She has a ton of archetypes and they're all fleshed out with characteristics. So you have archetypes with what their natural qualities are, and then playing with it even more, there are destructive tendencies if we don't recognize it. And those are the shadow part of the archetype. So it's when they're destructive or they're interfering with your life. So you have it, but it's hurting you. An example that comes off the top of my head is the addict archetype. And so if you're an addict and it's unconscious, then you probably are addicted to alcohol or drugs or food or whatever, your social media. Once you recognize the addict, you can direct it, and it can be your passion. It can drive you towards your purpose. It just gets you in the flow of the thing you really want to do in life. And so then the addict is empowered. And so that's, and so she has all of these tools and she wants you to find 12 of them, four of which are stable all the time. Everybody has these, according to Carolyn Miss, four archetypes, and they're called the survival archetypes. Do you remember all the names of them?
I do. So the four survival archetypes are the victim, the saboteur, the prostitute, which is always an interesting energy around it, and the child archetype. Now, the child can be broken down into a few. There's the wounded child, the orphan child, the nature child, the divine child. You're usually one of those child ones. You're not typically all of them. So everyone will have the victim, saboteur, prostitute, and everyone will have the child. But typically when you identify the child archetype within yourself, you're one of those subsets of childs, either, again, the wounded child, the orphan child, et cetera.
So you take those four and you have them. And if it's anything like me, I was completely uncomfortable with adding everything but the child. Like, I don't want to have an archetype that's a victim. Are you kidding me? You know, and I think that'll be a podcast in and of itself. There's too much to play with in those.
So much there.
Yeah. And then Carolyn says, pick eight more. And she plays with astrology as well. So the 12 houses. So each of these archetypes end up in a house. And it's whether it's your personality or your relationship, an archetype lives in each one of those places. And she adds a bit of magic to it. So it's fun if you can get out of your logical head. You do a little ritual that she has up on her website, and it places your archetypes in the houses. So it's just a trusting energy to put them where they need to go. And it's really fun because then you get to explore these energies in different places in your life and see what comes up. It makes them active.
Yes. And for those listening, if you decide to go down that route, we'll put the link to Carolyn Miss's archetypes in our show notes. And one of the fun exercises that I did when I first was learning about my archetypes is there's 12 archetypes and 12 months in a year. So 1 month a year, or 1 month every month in that year, I spent time with one of my archetypes. So whatever was in house one, which for a long time was the king archetype, now it's more the sage, I spent all of January learning about that archetype, seeing how it showed up in my life and how I interacted with it and the energy behind it. Why was it in house one and not house 10, for example, or 9. And so each house has a different energy with it, which just adds a little bit more of a context and a little bit more complexity to the archetype itself. So it starts to take that collective unconscious energy and make it a little bit more personal to you. It gives you a little bit more teeth to dig in with into why that, not only why you chose that archetype, but maybe how that archetype feels like it's showing up in your life. Because when you do this ritual that Jen mentioned, it's almost like picking names out of a hat. Like you don't put the archetypes in the house per se. You're picking a house number and an archetype, and then you put them together. So you might first pick house 10 and the sage archetype, and then that's where your sage sits, is house 10. So it's kind of, as Jen said, this trust exercise where the archetypes are almost picking where they're showing up. And learning and leaning into that and figuring out why those archetypes were showing up with that energy can be a lot of fun play. And I mean, a month is not, if you're just starting this, is probably not enough time to spend with each archetype, but it's a great way to be present and conscious of that archetype and spend some time with it that you might not otherwise have had a chance to. And this is why working with archetypes is so important, because as you start to identify with these archetypes, well, there's two things. One, you can over-identify with the archetypes like I did with the leader, and that can kind of sabotage your growth because you're kind of pointed in the wrong direction. You might have the energy of what that archetype represents to you, but maybe not quite the right word. It kind of goes to that quote with the rose, you know. You can smell that energy. You can, that fruitful, beautiful smell that a rose has, but it might not be called a rose. It might be called something else. And that doesn't mean that that energy isn't any less valid or true to you. It just might mean that that word you chose isn't quite what's fitting there. And I'm smirking as I'm looking at Jen at this, because I went through this a lot. There were many times where I over-identified with an archetype and I had to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, what energy of that archetype is showing up here? Because as I look into this specific archetype, it's not quite resonating with what I thought it would. And so sometimes the word changes, but the energy stays the same. And that's okay too, because the beautiful thing is that the whole point of the archetype isn't to go, I have the sage in my archetype wheelhouse. It's to go, this is how I show up in the world. So regardless of maybe a couple reiterations of looking at this, the whole point is to uncover that energy within yourself and how you show up and how you get there. Archetypes are just a tool to help you get there. And as you start to identify with that or integrate with that energy, both the shadow side of an archetype and the strengths within an archetype, you start to show up in this healthy, active way and you become this wholeness. And that's really where I see the archetypes in the long run or the big picture taking you.
And if I may indulge your example a little bit,
please.
When you were in I Must Be a Leader, it was almost a shadow function of it. You would look and be like, it's the top down and I need to set the standards and I need to decide what's going to happen. And this is uncomfortable and it's not working. That archetype of the top down, you were aspiring towards. And the energy that lives in your body wasn't that archetype. It was like misplaced into that. So the energy of that, of the leader archetype, didn't actually match the energy in your body. It was one that was put on you by other people. You know, it's like, yes, I have this skill, I have this gift, but I must do it from this CEO position or something.
Well, and you guys are going to find those listening that this is why I love shadow casting. And the beauty of this is I have two direct projections, let's call them, of why I felt that I had to be this leadership role, one of which we already talked about. And that was being told at the kindergarten age, you're going to be a senator. A senator is a leader. They're the charisma. They're the politician. And so I just immediately went, okay, that's who I am in life. I'm a leader. And again, the energy of that, the charisma, the ability to interact with other people doesn't mean that you can only use that as a leader. In fact, I think I use that much better embracing the sage archetype than I ever did as the leader. And the second reason I really pushed towards this leadership role is that archetypes within themselves, if you don't spend the time with the actual, we're getting here deep here for a second, but if you don't spend time with the actual cognitive functions, I believe, behind some of these archetypes, like, for example, your Myers-Briggs type indicator, or in my case, the ENTJ, if you tell someone you're an ENTJ and they have even like a 1% knowledge of the archetypes of the MBTI, they go, that's the leader, that's the manager, he's the taskmaster. And so I immediately, as I was learning and leaning into that archetype, I was like, oh, I have to be the leader. I was told I was going to be a senator. I'm told by my Myers-Briggs that I'm a leader, so I have to be the leader. And really, it was misidentifying and misapplying the energy behind those collective archetypes that set me on that path. And by working with my archetypes over time, I've learned that that energy can still be there under a different name. I was going to say a better name, but that's really subjective. It's just under it's under a more accessible name, because I'm allowing myself to show up more as I am.
Right. And if you look at Myers-Briggs or Enneagram or any of those personality type tools, oftentimes they're given an archetype to represent them. I just Googled what the ENTJ is in 16 personalities, and it's the commander, you know, so it's a guy on the top giving down the, and absolutely, it doesn't have to be that. That's just the generalized stereotype. And so that also plays into the idea, stereotypes aren't the archetypes. So ENTJ, ENTJ has a stereotype of this authoritative energy that gives stuff down. That's the stereotype of it. But the actual energy has lots of manifestations. It's just using those world building skills and seeing patterns and that kind of stuff. And you have to dive into the tool itself to really see that it can take on all kinds of layers. It's not stereotyped into one type of person. And we'll dive into that. We'll make a podcast on Myers-Briggs at some time.
That was probably more of a tease than anything else, but I felt it was so important to like the why of why this work is important.
Yeah. And the best part about this is it does dive into an entirely different energy, which is just because you have a Myers-Briggs or you have an Enneagram or you've done Big Five or you play with archetypes, if you put all of them together, it creates your wholeness. You start to see your weaknesses and your strengths, and then those archetypes start to play out and you can start looking at where they're on their destructive path once you start to breathe into them and how to take them to a better level. And so that's the whole point why we love archetypes, because Myers-Briggs will give you a piece of your personality and Enneagram will give you another piece of your personality and Big Five will give you a piece of your personality. And if we want to go back to the beginning of this, finding which Avatar the Last Airbender nation you're with will give you another piece of your personality, you know, because Dave and I like to play with that too. I'm an airbender.
Oh yeah. And I'm a firebender, 100%. Yeah.
So, and that brings another level. They're just pieces to the puzzle. Not one of them will tell you all of yourself. But as you start to put all those pieces together, archetypes will form. And that's when you start really diving into your personality and who you want to be. You stop identifying as, I'm an introvert, so I don't do this. It's like, no, it's okay. You have a leading introverted thing, but this archetype can teach you how to be into the world.
Yes, I think that's beautifully said. And I think just really hitting on that last piece too, I mean, have fun with this, in my personal opinion. If the archetypes and working with the Caroline Miss 12 archetypes is a little bit too much seriousness maybe, and you would rather identify with which avatar element you are, earth, wind, fire, air, or it's which character are you in your favorite fanfic or your favorite fandom, go that first. Approach the archetypal energy with something that resonates with you, because that's your inner being calling out to you and saying, hey, I want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to be felt. And there really is no right way to do this, which is why I hesitated before when I said best. There's only more ways that you can unlock yourself. Jen and I, for example, use the archetypical energy of the elements from Avatar: The Last Airbender world building to understand how we operate with our archetypes, our Enneagrams, and our MBTI. Every time we get a little bit more piece of the puzzle, we try to integrate that in so we can feel more whole and more in our being. And that's where the fun of it is for me. And that maybe we'll go find a quiz and include that in our show notes. And you can leave a comment with which element you identify with, or maybe we'll have a couple quizzes there. And we can start playing with that from our audience of where do these archetypes show up for you in maybe more of a lighter way, maybe a little bit more approachable. Or if you decide to go down the Caroline Myst route, and we have that in our show notes as well, we'd love to know which 12 archetypes you picked, or which 8, because you have the standard 4 survival ones. You know, we would love to hear from you guys and how those archetypes are showing up for you, or if you work with archetypes in the past, why you feel archetypal work is important.
Yeah, it's just a road in. There's so many levels of archetypes and so many entrance points. And the main goal as we play with our archetypes is to break our unconscious patterns. That's the point. So we don't want to find an archetype and latch onto it hard and say, well, this is who I am. You know, I'm this thing. So you just have to deal with my shitty side. You know, it's like, no, I can grow out of that. Like, I'm a rebel, and that could be that I just do what I want. Or if you tell me to do something, I'm not going to do that, which I do have that temperament. It's another temperament tool that's totally fun.
What?
Do you remember Gretchen Rubin? You know, and you have the 4... I forget what it's called. It's the 4... It's how you interact with... my brain knows this, how we interact with expectation, whether we do, how we deal with inner expectation, our own expectations, or outer expectation.
Yeah, it's the 4 tendencies. Sorry.
Yeah, the 4 tendencies, exactly. And when I tested the 4 tendencies, I'm a rebel, which means if you tell me what to do, I don't want to do it. And even if I tell myself I have to do something, I don't want to do it. The only way that it works is if I want to do it. And then when I want, I just go out and do it. But that's destructive. If somebody tells me to do something and I immediately rebel against it, that doesn't serve me. I need to recognize it, and then I can grow that. So I'm a rebel of delight, which is a weird thing to be. It means that I'm rebelling against the suffering and the hate. And I'm looking for what I want to see, and I'm growing into the beauty of things. I'm a rebel of delight. And just for all knowledge on this, I got rebel of delight from another personality tool called Gene Keys, and it was created by Richard Rudd, and he's a poet. So he was talking about one of my Gene Keys, and he spoke about the creative rebel, the rebel of delight. And I love that. And I wanted to embody it, not just as something I practiced, but I wanted to be a professional of doing it. And so that's where that archetypal name is.
Wow.
So is our audience overwhelmed? This is only part one.
I was going to say, I could keep going. One show note I want to add in case we want to just have this in somewhere. I think it's important to note that we see archetypes in 2 ways, and we've hit on them both. And I just want to summarize it for the audience. And one is, archetypes are a symbol, which is why we're cautioning against the over-identification of it. It's just a representation of how something shows up for you. Number 2, archetypes are a tool, which is why we also say don't over-identify with it. A tool is something like a hammer, a screwdriver. We don't identify, when we need a hammer to hit a nail, we don't identify as I'm the hammer. We just have a hammer. We just have a screwdriver, depending on what tool we need to screw a nail in or to hammer a nail in. And that's how I kind of see that those archetypes being used, is they are tools to uncover more of how we show up in the world and how to make our unconscious conscious. And I don't know, I feel like we're running out of time today, but maybe I'll save for my archetypal name, the Sage of Creative Scaffolding, for next week, so we can give some time for everyone to absorb what we've talked about already.
Most definitely. Yeah. Wrapping this all up, we threw a lot of spaghetti at the wall. Mostly we were talking about character archetypes. So as we move forward, we'll talk more about Jung's four archetypes and the survival archetypes and just some of the other tools that we play with moving forward. Yeah, dive in, give us a comment. What were you most interested in this podcast? Like what would you like to discuss for part two first?
Yeah, and make sure to like, subscribe, comment on our videos. We love to hear from our audience. And thank you guys so much for listening and taking this journey into archetypes with us.
Until next time.
See ya.